To be honest, this is a continuation of last week's teaching. Okay? I will review last week so that we can continue into this teaching. So the review from last week, which is the reality of Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, the Mount of Curses and the Mount of Blessings. That goes from Deuteronomy 27:2-8, create a mezuzah. You take the rocks and you put to whitewash them, and then we're going to write the commands. The Ten Commandments will be written on them. They're going to be mounted upon Mount Ebal on the Mountain of Curses. But what was important was that this was a reminder of the commands, but it was more than that. It was going to be a doorway to the land of Bethel. We saw that Jacob, when he went off to live with Laban, and he came back, the first place he stopped at was at Shechem, right between Ebal and Gerizim. And he built an altar there. This is where he went to the gods and he buried them under the terebinth tree. And he spoke with Yahweh, and Yahweh said, from here, this doorway, I'm then going to take you to Bethel, the house of God, but prepare yourself, get rid of all of the idols, and come to me. So even when Israel, now they're coming back, it's a parallel, coming back from Laban, coming back from the nations, coming back from Egypt, all right, we're going to first pass through what is this doorway, and going through that door, we remember the commandments, and we prepare our hearts to meet with God. Bethel, again, is house of God. Get rid of idols. Anything that hold you back from Yahweh, or something you depend on. Sports people have all these good luck charms. That's an idol. You can be an idol. In fact, we're probably the greatest idol because we depend on ourselves to fix a problem usually before we ask Yahweh. Okay? And usually when we fix a problem, it's just like our forefathers, like Adam and Eve, well, I'm naked, well, I'm going to sew fig leaves together. Yeah, at first you're like, wow, it's great. They're so flexible. By the end of the day, those leaves are all dried out. You take a step, there goes all your garment, and you're starting all over again. Same thing with all the ways that we try and fix our own problems. Rejoice and present offerings on the rebuilt altar. When they would come back, no doubt they found the stones that Jacob built into the altar there on Mount Ebal at Shechem. So they were rebuilding something, not building it for the first time. Jacob's well is actually, and I'll show you in a minute on a picture, is actually on Mount Gerizim, the mountain where the blessings are. Shechem is right in the middle between the two mountains, a city. Shechem is a city of refuge. So if you were found that you did something, like you were doing something and someone got killed or died, you were given refuge to go there. Joseph is buried there. Now, key points I want to emphasize is this point of the door. At this door, they're going to rejoice and present offerings. And this idea of Joseph being buried there, we'll get back to that later. But that's a review leading us to what we're going to look at today. By the way, this is the picture I showed last week. This is Mount Ebal. If you look at its Hebrew word, it just means bald mountain, which means nothing is living on it. This is Mount Gerizim. There are many things living on it. This is Shechem, the city. The actual mezuzah would have been on this side, written with the Ten Commandments. And Jacob's well was on this side, where there was life. But you will see how close these two mountains are. The entryway is not that a huge of a space between them. You get this feeling that you're walking through an entryway. Turn me to John. That's the Gospel of John, chapter 4. If you want to go ahead and put your finger there, we're going to be coming back to this, to John, chapter 4, where Yeshua meets a woman at Jacob's well. The one thing about Yeshua's teaching that we need to understand Well, I'll say two things. One is that it's based upon the Torah. And that's the first five books and the rest of the Old Testament, the Tanakh. And so when Yeshua teaches, it would be like, I'm going to go to Walmart, and let's say I buy the five-gallon container of laundry detergent, right? So they're selling me a 5 gallons of laundry detergent. But I can buy 1 gallon of laundry detergent, and then you water it down. And it's cheaper this way, so you buy the concentrate because it's smaller, and you can put some water in it, and you don't have to pay for the water that's in the other one, right? And there, a lot of salesmen sell it that way. Yeshua's teaching is not the watered-down kind. It's concentrate. And so if we really want to understand Yeshua's words, we have to literally go back and water them down a little bit to understand them all and actually go back to the roots of them. Otherwise, like this simple teaching, like he's just talking, every single word or phrase is extremely important to understanding what he's trying to get at, which is far more powerful than just one woman. By the way, this also sort of goes back to love your neighbor again. Sorry. You're going to hear this a lot. But John 4, 3 through 9. And I'm going to start with verse 3. So he came to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. This is the plot of land that Jacob is about to be dying in Egypt, and you go back to Genesis to check on this, he says, I'm giving you this land, the land I took by bow and arrow and so on. This is going to be your land. Of course, this is also where Joseph is buried. Now, Jacob's well was there. Yeshua, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well, and it was about the sixth hour. This is not the time, we'll get to this in a minute, for people to usually come out and get water. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Yeshua said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, how is it you, being a Jew, ask a drink of me? And really, you could almost put two question marks. A Samaritan, a woman? Because both of them are significant. For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Have none. No dealings at all. Now, land given to Joseph by Jacob, I already spoke about that. Yeshua came to Jacob's well. Makes sense, he's going to come. This is significant because, of course, Yeshua is also, within Judaism, there are thoughts, there's these two foreshadowings, Messiah ben Joseph and Messiah ben David. In fact, I think Yahweh has a great sense of humor because Yeshua, if you were to say his full name, right, you'd say Yehoshua ben Yosef. He is Yeshua, son of Joseph, which I think is deeper than just the physical reality that his dad's called Joseph. He is son of Joseph, Messiah ben Joseph, the suffering servant. So I think that's significant in the comparison or connection here. It's the sixth hour, not a normal time for the women to come, so this gives you an idea that this woman by herself is probably not accepted by even the people of her area at this point. Samaritan and woman, where the significance, you're asking a drink. Now, they thought of Samaritans like they would think of Gentiles or anyone who is unclean. And they're basing on Scripture. If you're unclean, I can't touch you. You can't touch me. You make me unclean. And they thought this idea of being unclean was unholy, and they were doing this out of love for God. They missed out on things like the red heifer, where for those who were unclean to enter the camp, the priest had to kill the red heifer. And when he killed the red heifer, guess what happened to him? He became unclean for the day. And the person who walked in and picked the ashes up and moved the ashes to the outskirts, because you got to be at the very entrance to the camp for them to come in, that person became unclean. When Yeshua went to the tree, he became unclean for righteous reasons. So we got to be careful about that. Jews and Samaritans do not interact. Again, they're like, why? Why? Who are the Samaritans? Why do the Jews hate them? Okay? First of all, you need to understand this. Israel used to be one country with one capital, which was Jerusalem. But soon after Solomon, we have the nation is divided. Jerusalem is the capital of Judah. Look what is the capital of Israel. Samaria. Samaria is the capital of Israel. So first of all, you're going to have some huge animosity already from these tribes and Israel. And I mean, this gets really deep. I don't have all the time and all the slides to do this. But even when Purim occurs and King Ahasuerus is coming in and asking everybody to bow down, and all that goes on, when he comes into the northern territory, they tell him, we'll let you take over with no defense as long as you do not count us among the Jews. The southern kingdom did not have a love for the northern kingdom. That's significant already. Now, there are two theories of where the Samaritans came from. The Samaritans will tell you that they are children of Ephraim and Manasseh and from Levi. That's what all of their materials say that they actually come from. Now, the Jews, from their Talmud, say something different. They say they are peoples put in the land by the Assyrian king. That some were killed by lions when they were put there. That one priest was given to teach the people about Yahweh. That would have been a Levite. And that there were a mixed people. That's the Jewish theory of where Samaritans came from. Now, my point is to try and prove that these two theories are probably both right at the same time. You're like, how is that going to be possible? Well, let's look at the only thing that we should actually give support to, credence to, which is the Scriptures, right? So in 2 Kings, and it's up here for you, it's 17:24. We're going to be reading a number of verses in a row from 17. It says, and the king of Assyria brought people from Babylon, Cuthith, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim, and to place them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. And they took possession of Samaria and dwelt in the cities. Verse 25. And it was so, at the beginning of their dwelling there, that they did not fear Yahweh. Therefore Yahweh sent lions among them, which killed some of them. This some, by the way, could mean like they put in and Yahweh killed all of them, and so they had to bring some more. Or it could mean that they just literally just killed some. The hard part is that word some is not in the literal Hebrew. So you could be, if it was literal Hebrew, they killed them, but we're going to see in a minute that they're still there. And so either a new group is brought in, or if a new group is not brought in, then some were still left. Continuing in verse 26. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations whom you have removed and placed in the cities of Samaria do not know the rituals of the God of the land. Therefore he has sent lions among them, and indeed they are killing them because they do not know the rituals of the God of the land. So even they realize that there's a spiritual force going on, and this God is awfully powerful, and we better have some awareness of this. And they're asking the king of Assyria this. So you can imagine coming in trembling. And the king of Assyria commanded, saying, send there one of the priests whom you have brought from there. Let him go and dwell there, and let him teach them the rituals of the god of the land. So here we're going to have a priest sent back whose whole goal is to teach him the ways of Yahweh. Verse 28. Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in where? Bethel, the house of God, and taught them how they should fear Yahweh. Now I'm skipping ahead to verse 33 and through 34. Listen to this. They feared Yahweh, yet they served their own gods, according to the rituals and nations among whom they were carried away. To this day, they continue practicing the former rituals. They do not fear Yahweh, which is that's probably a misinterpretation, because you're going to see in a minute it says they feared Yahweh. But they do not fear Yahweh in regard to following his commands. See where it says, nor do they follow the statutes or the ordinances or the law and commandments which Yahweh has commanded the children of Jacob. Notice again, what wording is here? To the children of Jacob. This is whose well? Jacob's well, whom he named Israel. Remember, from Bethel's is when he called him and actually named him Israel from Jacob. Ezra is when the people came back. Remember, people were taken out, and so people fill in that spot. Now people are coming back. They came to Zerubbabel, which is the governor who is in charge, and the heads of the father's houses, and this is the Samaritans, basically. Let us build with you the temple, for we seek your God as you do. And we have sacrificed to him since the days of Ershadan, king of Assyria, who brought us here. So there's a group of them who's been sacrificing to Yahweh the whole time. And they come and they say, you know what? We would like to help you rebuild the temple. But Zerubbabel and Yeshua, and the rest of the heads of the fathers of the house of Israel said, you may do nothing with us to build the house of our God. But we alone will build to Yahweh, the God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us. They told them, we're not going to lie to do this. Now the question here is, and I've always wondered, at no point does it say they sought Yahweh or Yahweh said. Okay? It does not say that. Now, at the same time, if you're going to rebuild a house and these people aren't following the commandments and don't know the commandments, are you going to trust them to build the house of Yahweh when you're just coming back because of sin? There could be a fear that you're carried away again. So my point here is not to say this is right or wrong, but you can see that there's a separation and we don't want anything to do with them. They desired, this is important, desire would be like being thirsty, to rebuild the place of worship, but they were denied the opportunity. So they had a desire, but were not allowed to fulfill that desire. So they built a temple on Mount Gerizim. They were not going to be left out of having a place to worship Yahweh. And so they built their own. Where? Where they desired to live on the mountain of blessings. Right? So that shows somewhat a knowledge of the reality of some scripture. Of course, they miss out that it's a doorway, a portal to going to the house of God. But if that's where they got to build it, that's where they're going to build it. Now remember, the woman's there. Many times, this is a tradition, that when you would take a people out, you would leave the poor. This is spoken about in Jeremiah, when the people were taken out of Judah, the poor left to take over the land. So even though Israel was taken out, there's a high chance that the poor of Israel were left behind to take care of the land, included with the people that were brought from the nations. Well, if people from the nations were living there, and the poor of Ephraim and Manasseh were living there, what's the odds that they intermarried? Probably good odds. Probably really good odds. Okay? Now, Could the poor have intermarried? Yes, there's a good chance. Am I saying it exactly happened? No, but you're going to see that I have more evidence than this to the possibility. Other prophecies against Israel to consider. Okay, you're going to see that these are against Israel, not the Samaritans, but against Israel, the northern tribes. And listen to these. The first one is from Amos, chapter 4, verse 8. Listen to this. So two or three cities wandered to another city to what? To drink water. But they were not satisfied. Yet you have not returned to me. And so the verse here is that Yahweh has made them thirst for something, that they're searching, but they're finding nothing that satisfies it. And what he's hoping is that they realize, and is that Yahweh is the only thing that's going to satisfy the thirst that they're really searching for. That's the goal of what Yahweh's trying to get them to understand. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13. This is extremely important in regard to Israel. And again, guys, I'm hitting on most important verses. I could put books up here. I mean, entire biblical books about Israel to give you the consistency of it repeating over and over and over again. I'm hitting highlights for you to understand the connections. Because again, we'd be here weeks. For my people have committed two evils. The first evil, they have forsaken me, the what? The fountain of living waters. I am the fountain of living waters. And what have they done, number two? They have hewn themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Meaning, the place where they would find water, living water, that would continue welling up for them to drink and be satisfied, they've ignored, and they went and they dug their own wells to find the waters they wanted. Now, the point here is that he's saying that these are other gods. These other wells that they are drinking of are other gods. Poison wells. Poison water. Now, Hosea, and that's really the biggest book, and we'll be getting to a lot of that, a Bible study on Wednesday. 13:15, this is speaking of Israel, though he is fruitful among his brethren, and that goes back to Joseph, he would be fruitful as a prophecy. An east wind shall come. The wind of Yahweh shall come up from the wilderness. Then his spring shall what? Become dry. And his fountain shall be dried up. He shall plunder the treasury of every desirable prize. Basically, everything that Israel prizes as more important than Yahweh, he's going to take away from them. But notice that that's connected to the idea of a spirit, wind is spirit. His spirit would come in and it would dry them up. That they would continue to be thirsty. Back to Jacob's well. If you got John 4, you can open up. I'm going to be going through a lot of verses right now from John 4. Hopefully connecting some of the dots for us to really get a better understanding of John 4. Starting with verse 10, Yeshua answered and said to her, this is a Samaritan woman, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you should have asked him, and he would have given you living water. All right? Who is the fountain of living water? Yahweh. He's saying, if you'd realize, if you'd asked, if you knew Yahweh, if you asked him, he would give you the fountain of living water. And I think the idea here is asking for his spirit. The spirit is sort of this idea of the fountain of living water because it can be in you and it can bring the word to life in you. Okay? The spirit is the teacher. He goes on in verse 11 and 12. Now, again, this is important. This is from the Samaritan woman's lips. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with. She's looking at the physical. And the well is deep. And it's interesting, the well of Jacob is deep. That's metaphorical, saying that Yahweh's word is very deep. Where then do you get the living water? Now listen to this. This is her words. Are you greater than our father Jacob? As she's connecting herself with these peoples from a far off country, or is she considering herself an Israelite among the patriarchs and considering Jacob her father? By her own words, she says that our father Jacob did this. Okay? So whether this is they've been teaching this for a long time and forgot where they really came from, or there's a mixed race of these nations and the poor that have intermarried, and they are an actual line of Jacob, who gave us the well and drank it from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock. And what's important here is that it's all connecting back to Jacob. Now that's significant, because guess what? Jacob is the example of a person that I was Jacob, a contender with God and the nations, but Yahweh changed me to no longer be Jacob, but to be what?
Israel.
So Jacob is the reality, is an example of a person's whole life being changed. Even his name being changed. Now, verse 13 and 14, Yeshua answered and said to her, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Meaning this physical water, you're going to be thirsty, you're going to come back. But whoever drinks of the water I will give him will never thirst. But the water I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing into everlasting life. If the Spirit's in us and is continuing to reveal verses and truths, is that not going to continue to encourage us, inspire us to go further, to be closer to Him, Yahweh. The woman's response, the woman said, sir, give me this water. Now, I think it's interesting that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw anymore. So she first wants the spiritual in it, so I'm not thirsty anymore, but man, to not have to come and get water? Wow. Now, you guys, I'm going to back up. We don't understand this. We turn on a faucet, and there's water. There are people in this world that walk 5-10 miles a day and then are carrying on their heads or on their shoulders, and they only can carry so much, so they're only going to drink so much of that water. But there be a well inside of me? Now, this is important. Go call your husband and come here. I believe this is a test of Yeshua to see if she's going to be truthful and honest, because that's going to be a sign whether she's willing to change or not. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Yeshua said to her, you have said well. I have no husband. For you have 5 husbands. Now, let me back up. Wait a minute. I have no husband. And you've actually told the truth? But you have 5 husbands? Probably a better translation is, well, 2 ways we can think of it. You have no set husband, but you've been with 5 men. Okay? Because he continues, and the one whom you are now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly. The person who she is living with now is not her husband. Now, this word husband is a key word. It's also key for you to know they're speaking to Israel. Right? And Israel and this idea of 5 husbands, multiple husbands. Okay? Remember in Jeremiah, they go and dig 1 more cistern? No, they give up the 1 fountain of living water and they go and dig multiple cisterns. And those cisterns represented other gods, other idols, seeking life other places. Well, listen to this. This is in Hosea 1 and 2. You're going to have to go back and read the whole chapters. I didn't put all the chapters up here. But this is a summary. Yahweh commands Hosea to marry a harlot. Okay? He continues, says Yahweh is the husband and Israel is the wife. So the harlot is representative by Israel and the husband is Yahweh. Israel goes after other husbands. The woman, the harlot, leaves Hosea and is unfaithful and goes and lives with all these other men for a time after they're married. This is all supposed to be a living lesson to us. Yahweh woos Israel back. Notice that they didn't deserve it. He goes out and he sets a table, puts the rose, candles, starts speaking words of love. Right? This is very important because guess what? We don't deserve Yahweh to call us home back. Quite often it's Yahweh who is actually the one that's calling us back. We just gave in going, that sounds much better than what I got now. And then what happens is that Yahweh renews the covenant between Hosea and the harlot, and everything changes. Those children that were born that are called not my children are turned into children that are my children. All right? So remember that, and this is Hosea 2:16, so I can be really specific, and it shall be in the day, says Yahweh, that you shall call me my husband and no longer call me my master. So Yeshua makes a point, right? The one you're with right now is not your husband. The gods, the ones that you're following, all of these, the five husbands are representative of the multiple gods, the cisterns, the wells they're going after. You're right for saying that because you only have one husband. And Yahweh is him. Now, 19 to 20, the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive there's something about you that you're a prophet." Again, I could have highlighted this. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain. What mountain is she on? Gerizim, because they could not go to Jerusalem. And you Jews, that's probably not, if you say, and you, but to say you Jews is probably a negative connotation, say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. That goes back to Ezra. You have to only worship here, and by the way, that's in Judah, so you have to come to our place. Like they have an ownership, like they've got their registered mark on Jerusalem. Now, 21 into 22, Yeshua said, "Woman, believe me. The hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship who? The Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship." Now, this next part has multiple ways it can be interpreted. And it goes to what Rabbi was making a point. When we see salvation, it means Yeshua. Now, this is significant, and I got to be careful on how you interpret this. So if you read back in Exodus that the people said, "Be still, for you're going to see my Yeshua today," he didn't mean you're going to see a human form of Yeshua. The Word had not become flesh. You're going to see his hand working mightily. That's his salvation. His hand is his Word. Okay? What's important here, and I love the little nuances. I don't know about you, but I love the nuances. It says Yeshua is of the Jews. Now, the Jews could be of Judah. Now remember, the woman started this whole thing saying, "I perceive that you're a what? A prophet." Now, there is a prophecy that there's going to be one like Moses coming. But there's also a prophecy that this messianic figure, the king to come, is going to be of what line? Judah. So, this could be a question of, I perceive you a prophet, but are you the prophet? For you see, we know that salvation, Yeshua, is going to come from Judah. And that's significant. Extremely significant. Now, what I love is that this whole thing is about worship. Do you know what Judah means? Praise Yahweh, or praise Yah. So the whole point was, when he was born, Leah started to praise Yahweh to bring forth another son. And his name was Praise Yah. And his whole conversation is saying salvation is coming from the praise of Yah. I don't think this is all by accident. These are nuances that only Yahweh can put in place. Now, again, notice here, in Hosea, speaking of Israel, Ephraim, Manasseh, says, "Hear the word of Yahweh, you children of Israel. For Yahweh brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land." What did Yeshua just say to the woman? We worship what we know. You worship what you do not know. And if they think back about 10 slides, it says that they feared Yahweh, but they did not accept the commandments. Well, if you don't accept the commandments, how can you truly worship Yahweh the way He asked you to? How can you know Yahweh? You can't. So the point being is, even in Hosea, it's saying, there's no truth, you don't know God, and Yeshua is making a point of that. You worship what you don't know. John 23 and 24, "But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth." Those are the two, by the way, those are your two great witnesses. This goes back to Patrick's conversation today. He says, he hears a lot of people saying, "Well, God told me." Well, that's the Spirit. If you can't find it in Torah, then you better be careful, because there are other spirits out there talking. And they're spoken of. Not every spirit that speaks to us is a messenger from God. When you have the Spirit and it actually ties into truth, you have your two great witnesses that it was a word from Yahweh. "For the Father is seeking such to worship Him." Again, who to worship? God is Spirit, and those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now, His point here is not to disqualify Jerusalem, but you guys are squabbling over where to worship Me. Yahweh just wants worship, but He wants it the right way. That's what He's trying to get across. If you're worshiping the right way, then He'll lead you to the place you're supposed to be. That'll be taken care of. But Yahweh's not sitting back and going to heaven, "Oh, man." It's like today. Let's be honest. It's taught today you have to go to a church to pray. And God hears better at a church than He does at home. Or God, if you worship in a certain place, it's a holy place. Guys, the ground you're standing on is concrete. Over top, a bunch of dirt. You are the holy ground. So when you're at home, Yahweh's going to listen to your prayers as much as He's going to listen to them here. Now what happens here that's beautiful is that holiness is collecting. So like when Moses was before Yahweh, what was on fire? A bush. That bush, I think, was a representation of the holiness, one person. But when all Israel showed up at Mount Sinai, what was on fire? The entire mountain. It's like there's this reality that more, and it's not, it's just a holy convocation. We're coming together as all brothers and sisters, and Yahweh can act and move amongst us, through us, in a powerful way. Verse 25 and 26, "The woman said to Him, 'I know,'" now remember, I was talking about, "and salvation shall come from the Jews." The woman said, "I know that Messiah is coming." Now there's a section there, who is called the Christ. If you have parentheses in your scripture, that means it was added at some point. Why would He have, "I know that Messiah," because Messiah and Christ are the same, "is coming, who is called the Messiah?" That makes no sense. So if it's got the parentheses, realize it's not in the original manuscripts. "When He comes, He will tell us." Here, remember, Patrick read today, a prophet. How do we know if it's a word from you? If it happens. If it happens, then it's a word from, then it's Yahweh working. Well, listen, this is the sign. He will tell us all things. Yeshua said to her, "I who speak to you am He." Now, I need you to really focus on this. He will tell us. This is the sign. He will tell us all things. He will tell us all things. That's the sign. Right? Look at verse 28. The woman then left her water pot. She left it. Did not even get, did not say another word. It doesn't say that. Went her way into the city and said to the man, come see a man who told me what? All things that I ever did. The sign was actually fulfilled, and she recognized it as a prophet. This was the Messiah. Could this be Messiah? Could this be the salvation that's coming from Judah? Then they went out from the city and came to him. So this woman who was out here all by herself at the well goes, and people are like, oh! And now a huge number of them come out to the well. Now, by the way, disciples are not here. I really think that Yeshua sent them away. We'll get to that maybe another day. We'll see. Verse 39 through 41. And many of the Samaritans of that city believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified, he told me all that I ever did. She said the sign. So when the Samaritans had come to him, they urged him to stay with him, and he stayed there 2 more days, and many more believed because of his own word. Meaning, now they got to hear him teach for 2 more days, and because of that, the word was fulfilled in them, and they believed. Because it was fulfilled. They saw he was the prophet. He was the Messiah. 42 and 43. Then they said to the woman, now we believe, not because of what you said, but we ourselves have heard him, and we know that this is indeed the Messiah, the Savior of the world. Now after the 2 days, he departed there and went to Galilee. What's funny is when he gets to Galilee, this is when he has the whole thing, well, no one's going to believe me because it's my hometown. The Samaritans believe in me, and I didn't grow up there. They didn't see my light every single day. I showed up, and they begged me to stay 2 more days. But my own town, where I am called Yeshua ben Joseph, don't even recognize. Don't even recognize. I'm going to take a moment to talk about his disciples, and then we're going to close for today. Disciples were sent off for food. They come back. In the meantime, his disciples urged him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat which you do not know. Therefore, the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him anything to eat? Now, first of all, they were shocked that he was speaking with a Samaritan or even went near him. In fact, there's thought that they actually left the whole region to go somewhere else to buy food because they thought all the food in that area was unclean. Verse 34, Yeshua said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. The Yahweh's work is to bring back these people to be one. That's what Yahweh's work is, to bring them, to make them one. But even the disciples were like, get away from her. Oh, who's around you? Why are you around Samaritans? Go back and read it. You're going to find that they don't like this. I think this is why Yeshua said, I don't even want to deal with this. I'm going to send them. Go get some food. I won't have you to interrupt me for this very important teaching. Now, if that's not significant, Acts. But you shall receive power, again, that spirit, that living water, spirits come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses to me in Jerusalem and to all Judea, and where? And unto the ends of the earth. And you shall go out. These are my disciples. You're going to go out and you're going to take my words and you're going to take Yahweh's words and you're going to give them to the people. That I want to not be their master, but I want to be their husband. This is not about a set of rules for him to lord over you to be, I am king. That's not the idea of all the rules. The rules are to bring you up close to him. not to put you down. And the reality is so beautiful in regard to the is Yahweh, is Yeshua completely honest when he speaks to the Samaritan? He is. He goes right to the issue of all of their people. He doesn't disqualify her. He doesn't get on and say, you shouldn't be worshiping on Mount Gerizim. But then again, he also says, you worship what you don't know. And I'm willing to sit here the next 2 days, and I'm willing here to teach you. And I'm going to send my disciples after to teach you. Because I'm gathering. I'm gathering those who would want to come and be a part of not only the lineage and the heritage of Jacob, but to be a part of Israel, my people. I leave you with this. This woman, she was not a righteous person. Yeshua didn't go, who's the most righteous person in the town for me to pick out? They were probably would have picked her as the least. But when a woman who has no... how can I give this as an example? Think of a compass. A compass always has a true north, right? That true north guides you so you don't get lost. We've all met people who have no true north. Torah is our true north. There are people who have no true north. This woman had no true north. She had no idea what she wanted or where she was going. When someone like that changes, everybody wants to know why. Because that's a major change. We all have that true north. Are we the most righteous person? No. But what did Yeshua say in regard to his own hunger? Because remember, he sat down because supposedly he was hungry. I'm filled by doing the will of my Father in heaven. That fills me. Even as you come to Yom Kippur this year and you are starving the body, there's a fullness beyond the body to the soul and to the spirit. It's far outreaching the body. That's what we seek after. That's why we go through teshuva and repentance. Because Yahweh deserves it. And we don't want to show up on Yom Kippur the idea of renewing our covenant, though he will accept us anyway. We want to show up that bride who has spent this time cleansing herself, preparing herself, ready to make that covenant, to renew it, to make it new, tangible to ourselves, to truly love him as he is. Baruch Hashem. If that's not enough of the blessing, Yahweh says, I'm going to give you a blessing. I'm going to give you a blessing. And the blessing is that his name, Yahweh, is going to give or put on us. His holy name. The same as a husband and wife, where the wife accepts the name of the husband. Part of making that covenant with him. We are honored by him. Yevarecha Yahweh vayishmerecha. Ke Yahweh tebendega et beteha. May Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh panaveyecha vihunecha. Ki Yahweh agas to rosh tos benesere soberti ite ortoge sobendad. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh panavidecha, v'yasem lecha shalom. Ki Yahweh muestre su rosh tos soberti ite concede su paz. May Yahweh's face turn toward you and give you his perfect peace. Shabbat Shalom.